Okay, good morning, everyone. Good to see you. Last week, we began discussing the topic of Olam Haba and Mashiach. Last week, we focused on the opinion of the Ramban, and we tried to explain the idea of Gan Eden and Gehenim and Olam Haba versus Yimos HaMashiach according to the Ramban. And today we're going to turn to the Rambam and consider some of the more controversial or debated elements of his position. The first point, probably the most controversial, relates to the Rambam's definition of Tchiyas HaMeisim and the relationship between Tchiyas HaMeisim and Olam Haba. As we saw last week, according to the Pashtus and Chazal, Tchiyas HaMeisim precedes Olam Haba and ushers in the period of Olam Haba, meaning to say Olam Haba has a physical existence. According to Rambam, that's not true. And his position, after all, is quite logical. If Olam Haba is an entirely spiritual existence, as everybody seems to agree about, and Olam Haba is all about being Nene, Meziv HaShchina, so why would it be necessary that there be a guf? And therefore, the Rambam says, there isn't a guf. Now, if that's the case, so then what role does Tchiyas HaMeisim play? And the answer seems to be that Tchiyas HaMeisim is a miracle. It will happen one time in history, probably during Yemos HaMashiach and the like, in which everybody will be resurrected. They will live, perhaps for an unusually long period of time, but they'll die again. And thus, the question, of course, for the Rambam is, what is the point of Tchiyas HaMeisim? I understand why it's so fundamental according to the other Rishonim, but according to the Rambam, it doesn't seem to be so fundamental. Why would it be one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim? Why would we say, Kal Omer Ein Tchiyas HaMeisim Min HaTorah, Ein Lo Chelek L'Olam Haba? Why would we have a Brach and Shmon Esrei about V'neman Atal Achayos Meisim? And thus, the Rambam was accused of, in fact, rejecting Tchiyas HaMeisim. Not because of what he says, more because of what he doesn't say. He doesn't refer to it too explicitly, though in passing reference he does in Mishneh Torah. Of course, though, in Perashat Mishnayos, he includes it in one of the Yud Gimel Ikar Yemuna, and he discusses it, but nevertheless, he was accused of not believing in it, and he defends himself in the famous Igeres Tchiyas HaMeisim. However, the question still remains, what is the purpose of Tchiyas HaMeisim? It's not clear how it fits into the eschatological perspective of the Rambam. So, the simplest answer is, and this is something that he alludes to on several occasions, that Tchiyas HaMeisim has more to do with Yemos HaMashiach, and specifically, it gives people the opportunity to live during the period of Mashiach and thereby get Olam Haba. The Rambam writes, and we're on page 16 of the source book, in Hilchos Malachim, Perak Yud Beis Halacha Dalid, Lo nis'avu hachachamim v'anevim yemos HaMashiach, lo kedei sheyishlatu al kol ha'olam, v'lo kedei sheyirdu ba'akam, the bottom of the page, v'lo kedei sheyinas'u osam ha'amim, v'lo kedei lecha v'lishtos v'lismoach. Why is it that the Jewish people long for Mashiach so much? After all, Mashiach is part of Olam Hazeh. As the Rambam says, it's not a period of time where there's necessarily going to be overt miracles. The Rambam very definitively believes that we accept the opinion of Ein Ben Olam Hazeh Limos HaMashiach Elashibud Malchios Bilvad. The Mashalim and the Nevi'im are metaphorical. When it says V'dar Ze'ev Im Keves, it doesn't mean literally. It's a reference to world peace. So okay, there'll be world peace. But what is so great about Mashiach? Why does everybody long for it so much? And we should note, by the way, it's not just that people happened to have longed for it, but that longing for it is actually part of the ikar. It's quite interesting. If you look back on page 12, in Perek Yud Aleph of Malachim, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam writes, V'chol mi she'eno mamin bo, o mi she'eno mechakel l'biaso, lo b'shar nevi'im belvad hu kofer, ela b'torah uv'moshe rabbeinu, sh'ri ha'torah ha'ida alav. Someone who denies Mashiach, or someone who does not long for its arrival, like we say in Ani Mamin, right? Ani Mamin be'emunah shelem v'yasa Mashiach, v'afal pi she'yes mameya im kol ze'achakilo. That, of course, that formulation was not written by the Rambam, but it captures this notion that part of the ikar emuna is not just belief in its coming, but she'eno mechake l'biyaso, and this is reflected in the Perusha Mishnayis as well. It's remarkable. According, all the other ikar emuna do not have this dimension in it. Right, it doesn't say that you have to believe in schar va'onesh and long for the schar. Schar va'onesh is primarily, let's say, about olam haba, as the Rambam says. That's the ikar makom schar. Doesn't say that you have to long for olam haba. The Rambam happens to say that kol neviim did long for olam haba, but that's not part of the formulation of the ikar emuna. Yet when it comes to Mashiach, it's not enough just to believe, but if you're eino mechake l'biyasa, which presumably means you do believe in it, it's going to come, but you don't long for it, so then you are being kofer b'taras Moshe, the Rambam says. Quite a strong formulation. So the Rambam, and we could ask, maybe we'll deal with that in a couple minutes, why that's true, but the Rambam asks, well, why is it that everyone longs for Mashiach so much, and so much so that it's even part of the Ikar Emunah? Why is that true? So the Rambam says, it's not because of the miracles, it's not because we're going to be powerful, but rather, Ela Kadeshi Yu Pinuyin B'Toro V'Chachma U'V'Chachma Sa V'Lo Yeh Lahem Nogesh U'Mivatel Kadeshi Yizku L'Chaye Ha'Olam Haba. Meaning to say, what is so great about the times of Mashiach? Times of Mashiach will be finally a time that we won't be persecuted. Umal haaretz dayas Hashem. There'll be peace and prosperity. And that will allow people to engage in the Chachma and in Torah and bizocha l'chaye ha'olam haba. Meaning to say the following. Nowadays, certainly the time of the Rambam and most of Jewish history, the Jewish people were persecuted. Like we read in Rashi at the beginning of this week's Parsha, Bikesh Yaakov, Leishev B'Shalva, Kafta Lav, Ragzel Shel Yosef, Lodai Lahem, Litzadikim, Sheish Lam Olam Haba, Elish Mevakshim, Olam Hazez. Well, it's a difficult Rashi. We can perhaps consider what it means in light of what this is saying, but the fact of the matter is that many, many, many great righteous people simply, in their lifetimes, don't have the serenity and the material situation which allows them to spend their days in what they wish they could spend their days doing, learning Torah and Chachma and the like. And so what does Yemos HaMashiach offer the tzaddikim? Why is it that they long for it so much? Oh, what could be better? You go back to yeshiva for the rest of your life, right? That's what Yemos HaMashiach is. You know, you get to learn in yeshiva all day. So that's why we long for it. What could be better? Now, what's so great about learning in yeshiva? So the Rambam adds an important point. He says, "Kadesh yu pinuyim b'toro v'chachma uv'chachmasa, kadesh yizku l'chayelam haba." Yemos HaMashiach offers people an opportunity to learn, to focus on Torah and Chachma, which gives them the opportunity eventually to get chaye olam haba. Meaning to say is, well, talk about shortly, Olam Haba for the Rambam relates a lot to the acquired intellect that a person appreciates over the course of his lifetime in this world. And we'll address that shortly in a moment, but the point is that Olam Hazeh, in a certain sense, is a little unfair. Not everybody has the same opportunity to learn Torah. Some people live a life of persecution and the like. So what does Yemos HaMashiach give a person? It gives a person a chance to learn Torah and become philosophers and Torah and mitzvos. But there's an obvious problem, which is most people missed Yemos HaMashiach, right? all the tzaddikim over the generations that died already. What does Olam Haba do? Olam Haba gives people an opportunity to live b'yamos HaMashiach. All those people that lived harsh lives and short lives and persecuted lives, they come back alive, they'll enjoy Yamos HaMashiach, which will give them a chance to earn Olam Haba. And in a certain sense, it evens the playing field. And that is why people were nis'avu l'Yamos HaMashiach. So there are many great things about Yamos HaMashiach. Yamos HaMashiach, certainly when we look at the Nevi'im, will be a period of time where there'll be universal recognition of God, and that's very important. That's one of the reasons anyone who loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be tremendously troubled by our position in Olam Hazeh, where so frequently it appears that evil triumphs and that good is crushed. We look forward to Mashiach because at that point in time, V'nizgav Hashem Levado, the whole world will recognize God. There are many, many things beyond just the personal opportunity to earn Olam Haba that are particularly important in terms of Yamos HaMashiach. However, in terms of the correlation between Tchiyas HaMesim and Yamos HaMashiach and Olam Haba, then even the Rambam, to a certain extent, agrees that there is a correlation. Not in the sense that the Ramban says that Tchiyas HaMesim ushers in directly the period of Olam Haba, but in the sense that Tchiyas HaMesim does give people the opportunity to have an opportunity of receiving and earning and getting Olam Haba. And the Ramban himself notes this when explaining the Rambam, and that you could see on page 17. Aval yirami kavana sarav sheolam haba etzlo mishamesh l'chol olamei hanefashos v'lo hamagia u'l'chol hamagia etzel aleihen l'ade ad, etc. V'yizku bo l'mala elyona mimala sam harishona. And we discussed last week to a certain extent how Olam Haba of the Rambam is somewhat similar to the Olam HaNeshamos of the Ramban. So that's the first important point in terms of the Rambam and Tchiyas HaMesim and Yamos HaMashiach and Olam Haba. Yes?
But doesn't it say that after Mashiach people are pushing back there, they don't have any more mitzvot?
We'll get there. That's what's
Hashem. So that was sort of my question. You said the Yamos
We'll get there. Bezos Hashem. We'll talk about mitzvos and bechira and the like b'yamos HaMashiach.
Okay.
The simple answer to your question, without getting into details, is that even if there isn't bechira, you don't need bechira to earn Olam Haba the way Rambam conceives of Olam Haba, because Olam Haba is not just you have a nisayon and you win your nisayon sort of b'taras l'fum tzar agra. Olam Haba is an outgrowth and a corollary of the intellectual achievements to a large degree that a person has in this world. And that's what we'll talk about now. The next very controversial thing about the Rambam's position with respect to Olam Haba. So turn to page 17. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Ches Halacha Beis, Ha'olam Haba Ein bo guf v'gvia ela nefashos ha-tzadikim bilvad v'lo guf kemalachi asharis. As we said before, there's no physical body in Olam Haba. Ho v'ein bo gvios ein bo lo achilav lo shtia v'lo davar mikol advarim shegufos b'nei adam tzrichim lohen b'olam hazeh. Hence, there's no physical needs. V'lo yera davar bo min advarim shemarin l'gufos b'olam hazeh kegon yeshiva v'amida v'sheina v'misa v'etze v'schok u'kiyotze b'hen. None of these things like laughing or drinking or dying are shayach in olam haba. Dying is a property of the physical body. Hence, if there's no physical body, there isn't death. Kach amru chachamim rishonim, olam haba, ein bo lo achil v'lo shtia v'lo tashmish, ela tzadikim yoshin v'atrosen v'roshem v'nenem iziv ha'shchina. What does that mean? Harein nizbar lecha, she'en sham guf, lefi she'en sham achil v'shtia. What need is there for a body if there's no eating and drinking? We saw last week the Ramban says no. The body still serves a purpose even without eating and drinking, and we're going to get to that. We're going to try to explain to the extent that we can understand a little later what the purpose of the body is in Olam Haba, according to the Ramban. When it says that the tzaddikim sit around in a circle with the crowns on their head, that is not literal, it's a metaphor. Kilomar, hatzaddikim mitzuyin sham, below amel v'lo yagia, sitting reflects the fact that there's no work. V'chol zeh she'amru itrosehen b'roshehen, kilomar da'as she'yedu she'biglala zachu l'chayom haba mitzuya imahen. What does it mean that their crowns are on their head? The head refers to the brain, to the intellectual accomplishments. And it's the da'as she'yedu, the knowledge that they learned, that is reflected in the metaphor of the crowns on their head. V'yatara shelahen ki'inyan she'amar Shlomo ba'atara she'itra lo imo v'harehu omer v'samachta ba'olam al v'simchas olam al rosham v'ein simcha v'ein ha'simcha guf k'dei she'tanuach al harosh kach atar she'amru chachamim kan hi ha'yedia. The atara is the yedia. Umahu zeh she'amru nenem eziv ha'shchina she'yodin u'masigin me'amitas HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'she'enem yodim v'hein beguf ha'afel v'ha'shafel. What does it mean, their nanim is evashchina? Because as long as we have a physical body, we're limited in our ability to understand and perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam. And thus, when we are no longer connected to our body in Olam Hazeh, in Olam Haba, we will be able to perceive what we hadn't been able to perceive thus far. And he continues, Kol nefesh amur b'inyan zeh, eino ha'neshama tzrich l'gof, elatzuras ha'nefesh shehi hadeya shehisiga me'abore kefi kocha ve'hisiga hadeos ha'nifrados v'shar ma'asim fi hatzura shebiyarnu in yinav perkavi me'elchus yidari Torah hi ha'nikros nefesh b'inyan zeh. So the Rambam says here that in what sense does a person enjoy Olam Haba? It's the de'a sheyedu shebiglala zachu l'chaye ha'olam haba. It's that knowledge. This idea is explained even more in the Mor Nevuchim. If you turn to page 18, in the 54th chapter of the third section, the Rambam writes about four types of perfections that are possible. This is a very important and also a controversial chapter. The lowest type of perfection, of course, is material possession perfection, a person that acquires many material goods. And among other things, this is a low-level perfection in the sense that it doesn't really become part of a person in any true sense. It could be lost. You could become very wealthy. Very quickly, you could become very poor. The second level of perfection, which is more closely related to man's body than the first, includes physical perfection of the constitution and the form of man's body. This is a little more associated with the person itself, but it is low level. First of all, it too can be lost. A person can be very strong and healthy, and in a matter of minutes could be very weak and sick. Moreover, it's something which animals too can achieve, and in a certain sense they achieve it in a greater form, and therefore it too cannot be the perfection for which we strive. The third type of perfection is moral perfection, the excellency of a man's character. This, of course, is indeed much higher. It's something that's only unique to man. Only human beings can achieve this. And the Rambam here says, indeed, that the purpose of most mitzvos is to bring one to this form of perfection. And we talked about this when we talked about Rambam's position about the reasons for mitzvos generally, how they relate to perfecting society, and that is this point. And this is indeed a very high level. However, the fourth kind of perfection, page 18, bottom, is the true perfection of man, the possession of the highest intellectual faculties, the possession of such notions which lead to true metaphysical opinions as regards God. Meaning to say, the highest level of perfection is a correct understanding of God. With this perfection, man has obtained his final object. It gives him true perfection. It remains to him alone. It gives him immortality. And it's on account of this that he's called man. This is what we were saying before. It gives him immortality. Meaning to say, through this perfection, a human being gains immortality. It is this perfection that becomes part of the soul and survives a person even after the person dies. That's not to say that the third perfection does not do so as well. However, this is still the highest. Now, before we explain what this means a little more, let's note that this is one of the things where, as we talked about in earlier occasions, you get different messages from the Rambam in different places. It's a reflection, perhaps at first it seems like a contradiction, but I think when we study the matter more thoroughly, we see really it's a reflection of the breath in the Rambam. One of the famous places, though, you could really look in a previous chapter in the Mon of Ruchim, where he focuses on the importance of Maisim in terms of Olam Haba. But an even more famous example is his interpretation of the Mishnah at the end of Makos of Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael L'Fikach Hir B'Lam Toro Mitzvos. And the Rambam in the Perish of Mishnayos over there on Makos Per Gimel Mishnah Yud Zayin, page 19, says, what does it mean that the Riboy Toro Mitzvos was a schus for Klal Yisrael? In what sense is having so many mitzvos a schus? And the answer is very powerfully that because there are so many mitzvos, everybody has a mitzvah which they can complete and perfect. Everybody, because people are different, Kshim Shepatzufeim, Shonin, Kach Deosen, Shonin, different mitzvos speak to different people. Different people are naturally going to be better at different types of mitzvos. And because there are so many mitzvos, every single person can find at least one mitzvah which they can do perfectly. For some it might be tzedakah, for others chesed, for others Talmud Torah, for others tefillah. But at least one mitzvah which they can perfect. I met someone recently who told me his mitzvah shiluach hakein. But it's very beautiful. It's a person who knows everything about shiluach hakein and did it many times. And so everybody could do one mitzvah totally lishma. And therefore, everyone could get olam haba. And that's what he says. L'chein amar Rabbi Chanina ki machmas bibui ha-mitzvos i'efshar shelo yaseh ha-adam achas b'chol yimei chayav b'shleimush v'yizka l'ashar sanefesh b'osu ha-maisa. If you do one mitzvah perfectly, even a single mitzvah, you'll get olam haba. And that's part of Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chelak li Olam Haba, because every Jew has a mitzvah which they will do and can do perfectly. So here you see his focusing not on the intellectual achievements with respect to Olam Haba, but Maaseh mitzvos. We also, and there's no need to go over this again, when we talked about Tameh HaMitzvos and the purposes of mitzvos, we saw the critique against the Rambam. The Maharal argues that philosophers put intellect on too high of a pedestal because of the rejection of the physical body. Moreover, we saw the Maharal reject this notion because this type of opportunity is only available to a select few. Not everybody has the gifts to become a great philosopher or even a great Talmud Chacham in a certain sense. And therefore, if it's something that's only capable, only two people in a generation are capable of achieving, that's inconceivable. Everybody has an equal opportunity to Olam Haba. And indeed, as we said before, this is one of the major critiques against the Rambam, that he was influenced by Greek philosophy in terms of his rejection of the physical body. Rejection of the physical body in terms of Olam Hazeh, and also rejection of the physical body in terms of Olam Haba. And this position is articulated very powerfully in the famous Igeres HaKodesh of the Ramban. As I'm sure you know, many people think that the Igeres HaKodesh was not written by the Ramban himself. And in fact, there are a number of very surprising ideas in Igeres HaRamban, but this criticism is indeed one which you see in many sources against the Rambam, and we'll read it from here. If it wasn't written by the Ramban, it was written by a Rishon, likely a Talmud of the Ramban, and it's a text which is widely quoted. And we'll read bottom of page 19. Da ki chibur zeh hu inyan kadosh v'naki. Chibor, intimacy, is something which is holy and clean. Kshiyadavar k'fima shera'oi, as long as it's done properly. Uvizman ha-ra'oi uvekavana ha-nechona. V'ayachshov adam ki b'chibor ha-ra'oi yesh g'nai v'chir chas v'shalom. A person should not think that in intimacy there's something dirty or disgusting. Shachibor ha-ra'oi nikra yediya. The appropriate chibor is called yediya, knowledge. V'lo l'chinam nikra kach, ka'amor v'yeda al-kana eschana ishtau. It's not by chance, it's not just a random euphemism that the Torah decides to refer to it by the term yediya. That is not haphazard. It's true, it might be a euphemism, but it's a euphemism that's reflective of the deep spirituality that's associated with this particular activity. And that's why he says that yediya is called, I'm sorry, chibur is called yediya when it's nechona, when it's done properly. A minor ha'ara, which is, there are times where it seems that even when it's not nechona, for example, in Bereishis Yud Tes, it says with respect to the story of Lot and the angels, it says v'neida'a osam, when it's referring to sodomy. Anyhow, v'zeu tipas hazera keshehinim sheches mimakom hakadusho v'tarnim sheches adev ha'chachma v'abina v'hu ha'moach. That, of course, is also why the bris milah is on the makom ha'milah, because of the potential kedusha here. V'da, she'ilu lo haya b'davar kedusha gedola lo hayu karen el achivor yediya. V'en ha'davar kasher chashav harav Hamorezal b'mor nevuchim b'hiyoso mishabeach l'aristo al ma she'amar ki chosh hamishosh hu cherpa lanu. And Rambam got it wrong in the Mor Nevuchim when he said that this is a cherpa. Chalila, ein adavar kemo she'amar hayevani lefi she'da'ato hayevani yesh shemetz minus she'eno morgash. Latent in this position of Aristotle is a shemetz minus, that's subtle and hard to recognize. And what is that? She'ilu haya ma'amin sha'olam mechudash bekavana lo haya omer kach ze hayevani hablial aval kol balei ha'torah ma'aminim sha'ashem baras hakol kefi ma shegazra chachmaso v'lo bar adava shi'a genai ochior. She'im yomar shachibor hu davar shel genai hine klei hamishgal klei agnos, etc. Meaning to say that why did Aristotle reject this? This relates to his position about the eternity of matter. But someone who believes that God created the world will believe that everything must have the potential for kedusha. It comes from God, and therefore it must be capable of being holy. Now, of course, it can be abused. Like so many of the things in this world, it could be used for kedusha, it could be used for the opposite. But if it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the whole world, then, of course, it must not be mechuar be'atzmuso, but rather have the potential for being kadosh. And that's why the Ramban, for example, in his commentary of Bereishis, explains why initially man was not embarrassed of their nakedness, because in and of itself this is something holy, and when done properly it's something holy, and the shame that was that's associated with sexuality is not something which is inherent, because inherently it is holy. So that's the first point, the first critique. Yes?
Obviously, how does this relate to something that God states clearly to not do or stay away from?
That what?
How does that relate to things that God says clearly to stay away from, like non-kosher food?
Okay, that's a very good question. What role is there in non-kosher food? And that's actually a little interesting, especially in terms of various midrashim about Yemos HaMashiach and the like, or Olam Haba and the like. yet. That might be one way of understanding that. But it's a good question. Not for now. But
in any event, what he's referring mm-hmm. to is things that God does not say are forbidden. Anything else?
Certainly that. Correct. Not only not forbidden, but a mitzvah, at least in the correct context. Another component. That another way in which this Rambam's position is disputed is about the nature of a Maisa Mitzvah. And among other places we could see this in the discussion in the Rishonim about the nature of what is and what is accomplished through a Nisayon. The Ramban on page 20 in Breishas Chaf Beis talks about the purpose of a Nisayon, especially Akedas Yitzchak. Why is it necessary that a Kadosh Baruch Hu test a person? Certainly God knows in advance what a person is and what they're capable of. And the Ramban famously says that the purpose is lios lo schar maisa tov, lo schar lev tov bilvad. Lahotzi min ha koach el ha poel. That a person doesn't just get schar for lev tov, but the schar one gets, the olam haba one gets through a maisa, is more powerful and more substantial than just through the lave. This could be understood on a psychological level, as, for example, is done so by the Sefer Ikrim in the footnote on the bottom of page 21, where he says, Lefi shekol poel yikne benefesh tchuna chazaka yosek shehi niknes bezulas maisa. That the purpose of a nisayon is that when you actually do something, it becomes part of you, you're kona it, it makes you stronger in and of itself. People who go through a nisayon and pass will sometimes say things like, I never thought I had it in me to do that. And that's one component. However, when you study this Ramban carefully, you see that even on a more inherent and metaphysical level, this is true as well. A maisa is more powerful than something that is just a tchuna that exists only b'koach. Ki ata yadati mitchila haisa yirasu b'koach lo yoytze apol b'maisa agadol azeh v'ata noda b'maisa v'yazuchuso shalem v'tihi maskortash leima me'im Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Not surprisingly, of course, and we could certainly say this is l'shitaso, the Rambam does not give this interpretation of a nisayon. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim in footnote 19 on page 21 says that the purpose of a nisayon is for other people to see. Da, ki kol nisayon sheba b'torah in kavanasov inyanav ela kidei sheyedu b'nei adam ma shetzarachem la'asoso. And later, sheyedu ha'umos. A nisayon is to prove to the world what a person is willing and capable of doing. It proves nothing to God. Now the Ramban agrees it proves nothing to God. However, the Ramban says, nevertheless, eino dome maisa to something that's just a inherent tchuna. And again, here too, this is l'shitaso. And the Rambam's position is difficult, as he deals with there, if you look at the chapter. How do you explain ata yadati ki yare elokim ata? If the purpose is just sheyedu hakol, that other people know.
In a different place when the Ramban speaks about Nisayon, doesn't he give an example of like a pot maker that when a pot maker wants to show off his wares, he like hits the pots?
Mm-hmm.
So that's also to show off.
The Ramban will not disagree that a component is what the Rambam says as well. The question is more the reverse. In other words, there could be many purposes of a Nisayon. The Ramban would probably agree that one component is indeed what the Rambam says, and the Rambam has strong textual proof that at least in many cases we see that to be the case. Now, this opportunity, I know we're spending a lot of time on Olam Haba, but as I think we see now, and will continue to see, this discussion of Olam Haba really reflects many, many broad and important yesodos that go well beyond Olam Haba. We've talked about here the nature of Maisa Mitzvos. You see the topic of, for example, asceticism in Olam Hazeh is an outgrowth of this topic. And another very important corollary to the Rambam's position of Olam Haba is his position about the nature of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, and indeed one of the most controversial and troublesome positions of the Rambam. The Rambam writes on page 21 of your booklet, in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, after he lists all 13 of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, he concludes, V'kasher yiyu kayamim la'adam kol ha'yesodos halalo ve'emunaso bahem amitis harei hu nichnas b'chlal Yisrael. When a person believes in these things, he's part of the Jewish people. V'chova l'ahavo v'lachmol alav v'chol mat she'tziva Hashem osanu al zeh min ha'ava v'ha'achva v'afilu asa ma she'yachol yos min ha'averos machmas ta'avaso v'isgabrus yitzro hara harei hu nenash kefi godel me'oryo v'yesh lo chelak v'hu mi'poshe Yisrael. A person who believes in the Ikari Emunah is part of Klal Yisrael. There's a mitzvah to love him, and even if he's sinned in many, many of the sins, he has a chelak l'olam haba. Of course, he'll be punished for his sins, but he's a Jew, and he's a chelak l'olam haba. V'kasher yifakfei ka'adam b'yisod me'elu ha'yisodos. Harei zeh yatza min ha'klal, v'kafer b'ikar, v'nikra min v'apikaris v'kotetz b'netios, v'chova l'snoso u'lashmido, v'alavu omer halom yisanech Hashem esna v'chulei. Someone who does not accept these Ikari Emunah is not part of Klal Yisrael and has no chelak in olam haba. The Ravid in Hilchos Tshuva Per Gimel Halacha Zayin critiques this position. The Ravid writes, Amar Avram, the lama kara l'zeh min. Why does the Rambam call someone who believes that God has some sort of corporeal body a heretic? V'kama gedolim v'tovim mimenu halcha b'zu ha'machshava l'fi ma shera'u b'makomos. Many people, even greater than the Rambam, made this error. Very high, holy, pious people may have indeed imagined God as some type of quasi-physical being sitting in heaven on his throne with a long white beard, right? They were wrong, the Ravid says. They were gravely mistaken. But are you going to say that they're a min? Are you going to say that they have no chelak l'olam haba? After all, what caused them to come to this erroneous conclusion? They came to it, understandably, l'fi ma shera'u b'mikraos, v'yoser mima shera'u b'divrei ha'gados ha'mishabshos es ha'deos. They came to this conclusion from the psukim. After all, there are indeed many psukim which imply that God has some physical sort of body. It's true, the Rambam is correct in understanding those psukim allegorically, dibra torah kalashim ne'adam, but it's understandable that somebody might not recognize that. And moreover, the agados ha'mishabshos es ha'deos, there are many agados which go even further, certainly Kabbalistic texts, in terms of implying that God has some type of physical body. And therefore, we can't fault someone for an honest mistake. This position, by the way, the Or Sameach on that line writes on the Divrei Beinu Chananel Huvu Urza Ruah Helchos Kriyashman, quoted in footnote 22. So this shows you the importance of looking things up. When I first saw that Or Sameach, I said, oh, he must mean that the Gdola Mizu, the Rambam, the Ravid who says that there were people even greater than the Rambam who believed in the corporeality of God, that must be the Rabbeinu Hanano. So you have to look up the Or Zeruah. He means the Or Zeruah doesn't, Chas HaShalom, Rabbeinu Hananel didn't think that God has a corporeal body, but the Rabbeinu Hananel in that place goes through the types of agados that the Ravid refers to that are mishabshos es hadeos and imply that God has a physical body. For example, the famous Gemara in Brachos that talks about what is written on the parshios of tefillin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rabbeinu Hananel explains that this doesn't mean that God actually has tefillin or has an arm, and explains what this means, and goes to great lengths to show that indeed you shouldn't take them literally. However, the Ravid says, I don't know who he's referring to. I once, if you look at Mark Shapiro's book, I think he has a theory as to who the Ravid might be referring to when he refers to the people that are Dola Meharambam who believed in the corporeality of God. But be that as it may, the Ravid says, how can we fault somebody for something which isn't their fault. And this position of the Ravid is not just the Ravid. Many of the later Rishonim and Achronim adopt this position as well. Two formulations can be found on page 22. First, the Radvaz. Lo matasi tam lepotrom in onesh. Here we're talking about a person. He was a certain darshan, and he implied a certain divinity to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Radvaz, of course, says he's terribly wrong. However, we're not going to excommunicate him or say he doesn't have ol chelak and olam haba. V'lo adif mimisha toa bed echad meikari hadas machmas iuno hanifsad shelo nikra b'shvil zeh kofer. Someone who makes a mistake, even relating to the Yud Gimli Kayamuna, but they make an intellectual mistake, faulty reasoning, is not called a kofer. V'harei Hillel, haya adam gadol v'tal be'echad mi'kari hadas, she'amar, ein la Mashiach li'Yisrael, she'kvar achlu b'yamei Chizkiyahu. He brings a fascinating proof. This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Perek HaChelek. It's not referring to Hillel, the famous Hillel, it's referring to Hillel Sheni. And the Gemara says that Hillel believed that the Mashiach was already happened b'yamei Chizkiyahu. The prophecies depicting the coming of Mashiach already took place. Now, Hillel was kofer, the Radvaz says in one of the Yud Gimli Karyamuna. Are you going to say that Hillel was a kofer, chas v'shalom? Why would we quote his positions? He was the one that instituted the calendar that we use, ad hayom hazeh. V'ata mevuar. Kevan she'ein kfiraso element p'nei she'choshev shema she'ala b'iyuno emes v'imkein ones hu upater. He's an ones, just like we say ones rachmana patre with respect to someone who is raped or forced to do some type of avera. The same thing is true with respect to mistakes pertaining to Ikari Amuna that are a result of falsy reasoning. The Ikarim makes the same point in this critique of the Rambam. Many other later thinkers do as well. There's a beautiful letter from Rav Kook where he's defending Rav Glasner, the author of the Dor Ravi'i. He was, of course, criticized for certain positions, Zionistic positions, and he was lampooned. And Rav Kook writes a letter in his defense. Of course, those critiquing him, it's hard to imagine that they would pay too much attention to a letter written by Rav Kook. But anyhow, in his defense, he invokes the Radvaz and the Ikrim, and he says, even if you think that Zionism is totally wrong, but it's no worse than someone who is kofer b'ikari emuna based on a faulty interpretation of the sources. So even if you think Zionism is wrong, so they misread the Psukim, they misread history, they misread the Gemara, whatever it is, we can't call them a kofer. And indeed, this is a very popular position, not just the Rambam, the Ravid, the Radvaz, the Ikrim, and others. So the question, of course, now is, what does the Rambam hold? All of you are surely familiar with the famous statement of Reb Chaim, Nebuch and Apikaris is Achat and Apikaris, that yes, it's true, such a person who comes to such conclusions not by their own fault, it's Nebuch, he's an Apikaris, poor guy, but Nebuch and Apikaris is Achat and Apikaris, he too is an Apikaris. But what is the fundamental issue at hand? And there are two approaches that are commonly given to defend or explain the Rambam, and we should consider both of them here. The first approach is based on what we've been talking about thus far, namely that the Rambam espouses a doctrine of acquired individual immortality based on the intellectual accomplishments of a person in this world. Meaning to say, to the extent that a person has true positions about God, so he will be able to enjoy Olam Haba. If he doesn't, even if it's through no fault of his own, he won't be able to have Olam Haba. Not so much as a punishment. With respect to punishments, we could say, Ones Rachmana Patre. But simply as a natural consequence. Just like we saw last week, the Nefesh HaChaim explained that Gehenim is a natural consequence of sin, and thus so too for the Rambam. Since Olam Haba is a natural consequence of the intellectual accomplishments of a person, then should they have acquired false beliefs, Olam Haba is naturally impossible. And that's why the Rambam says that if you don't believe in one of the Ikar Emunah, you don't have a Chelak Olam Haba. This halachic position and philosophical position is really an outgrowth of his philosophical position about the nature of Olam Haba and the nature of the Guf. Yosef Chaim Yanitz told me that there was a certain very, very famous and popular mashkiach in Eretz Yisrael who gives shmuzin around the country, and he would frequently present the position of the Rambam as correct based on Reb Chaim, Nebuch and Apikaris, Achat and Apikaris. And he heard from Rav Shlomo Fisher that he was very upset at this darshaner, because he said it's obvious that the Rambam's position here emerges from his philosophical position about the nature of Olam Haba. Now that's something that this certain mashkiach would certainly say we don't accept. And in fact, the Rambam's focus on intellectual accomplishments is something which is not the predominant position in Klal Yisrael. It's not the true or correct position, according to Rav Fisher. The correct position is much more in line with the position Al Pisod, the notion that Olam Haba is not focused on intellectual accomplishments. It relates to Maisim, it relates to how hard a person tries, Lefum Tzara Agra, the Am Haaretz, who's Moser Nefesh, is going to get more Olam Haba than the philosopher who's a dilettante. And therefore, just like we certainly reject the Rambam's position about the nature of Olam Haba insofar as it relates to intellectual accomplishment, certainly we reject the Rambam's position about Olam Haba in terms of somebody who doesn't understand the Ikar Emunah, or based on understandable, faulty reasoning. And therefore, Shlomo Fisher was very upset. He thought that the people who accept one vart of the Rambam, his strictness in terms of Olam Haba and Ikar Emunah, but not the other, is just a reflection of their not having studied the philosophy of the Rambam, and that's a mistake. We should note that this approach to understanding the Rambam is not so simple and straightforward. It might explain the Olam Haba component. It doesn't explain, for example, why not believing in Ikar Emunah like Mashiach is automatically grounds for lack of Olam Haba. Even more so, it doesn't explain why the person is so excommunicated in this world, why he's not part of Klal Yisrael in this world. If you say Olam Haba, so Nebuch Napikars, Achat Napikars, but why is there a mitzvah to hate him and exclude him? The other approach, yes?
I think it's still the same as the Olam Haba. Rambam assumes that all this philosophical speculation are facts in the fabric of the universe. So if you just have a mistake about the facts, then you have a mistake about the facts. So you're not going to have...
You could say that. Okay, is there more in terms of Mashiach? Perhaps. So the Rambam is Mechalek. But still, let's say in terms of the excommunication from the community. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's something that you have to think about. It's not obvious then why he should be excluded from the community of Klal Yisrael and Olam Hazeh to such an extent. Now you could...
Somebody thinks the world is flat is excluded from the community of scientists.
So. No. Somebody who thinks the world is flat is making a mistake. And maybe you'll say he won't get Olam Haba. But the question is... So you could say that. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that it seems to me it doesn't flow as obviously from the basic position. I see there are a lot of questions. I just want to... I'll take them in a couple minutes. We're running out of time. The second approach to defending the Rambam is espoused by thinkers like Rav Elchanan Wasserman. And he understands that the reason why someone who adopts a heretical position has no chelak in Olam Haba is because essentially it's not true that it's not his fault. Someone who is the honest searcher will come to true opinions. Someone who honestly is trying to figure out whether or not there is a God will certainly come to the position that there is a God. Any honest searcher will come to that position. Moreover, an honest searcher will have siyata d'shmaya in terms of reaching the correct positions. And this is not true just with respect to the existence of God, which is easier to defend, but really with respect to all Ikar Emunah, because he'll look and find them. And he thinks this is true both for Jews and non-Jews, as he explains in the beginning of the Biurei Agada at the end of Kobe Ta'aros and in Kobe Ta'amarim. And he explains with this the idea that why is it that someone as brilliant as Aristotle rejected certain Ikari Amunah, and yet a child of 13 is expected to accept them. He says that in a certain sense they are on an equal playing field with respect to belief in God. Because why would someone reject belief in God? Shochad, a person has certain subconscious and subliminal advantages and desires, reasons not to believe in God, or reasons why he would not honestly search and come to the conclusion that God doesn't exist. And therefore, a 13-year-old child who searches honestly will come to the true position, just as a brilliant mind like Aristotle, who searches honestly, will come to the true position. Aristotle, who is very brilliant, only came to the wrong positions because of shochad, because of subconscious and subliminal predilections, and he was able to use his brilliance to defend an essentially undefensible position. And thus, they're not truly innocent. And that's why the Rambam is correct. And then he says, well, what did the Ravid hold? Well, maybe the Ravid, that's still to a certain degree his ownness and the like. I thought that you could have a little raya for Rabbi Chanan's understanding from a Gemara in Zvachim. On Yud Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara says that if someone is mafresh achatas and hemir daso, and then does tshuva, so this is not necessarily an example of dichoy, because it's biyado lachzor. We know that someone who is a mummer, his karban is pasol. Someone whose karban is pasol and is not biyado lachzor, like someone who's nishtata, even when he gets better, his karban is still pasol. So why is a mummer different? Unlike someone who becomes a shote who isn't biyado lachzor, someone who becomes a mummer is biyado lachzor. If we assume that it's not his fault, he was simply convinced of his positions based on intellectual mistakes, so then we could argue it wouldn't be biyado lachzor. Of course, also, if you take Rav Amital's approach, the Rambam seems to be a lot more fair. Rav Elchanan's approach. There's just an interesting thing to think about. I'm not necessarily saying I endorse it, but we're running out of time, so I'll just present it. Rav Amital has a very powerful essay on this topic, and he writes, I believe this is in the translation, in Jewish Values in a Changing World, I believe that Rabbi Wasserman's explanations do not suffice. Many people come to a secular outlook not in order to justify their desires, but rather because of their dedication to ideals that many at times even demand great sacrifice. It is difficult to pin all disbelief on following one's desires. That's one point. Another interesting point is it's not so clear why, let's say, shochad should be relevant with respect to, let's say, denial of the incorporeality of God. I understand why shochad might lead to the denial of the belief in God. Someone, after all, who doesn't believe in God is free to do whatever he wants in life. But someone could be very pious, and like we said before, believe that God is sitting up on a throne in heavens with some sort of physical body. That's kfira, but it's not so clear why shochad would lead to such kfira. Again, I'm not saying that there aren't answers to these questions, but they're points to consider.
None of those are disproofs. They're just like saying, well, the other guy really wasn't so yucca. It's not like you can't argue with the person who argues like that.
It's true. They're not meant to be disproofs. I don't think Rav Elchanan would think that you can necessarily convince anyone who's skeptical based on his points. You could only convince him based on the points of points of truth, and he may accept them or he may not accept them. It's not meant to be an essay to convince the skeptic. It's really an essay to explain to the believer how it's possible that the skeptical could have no chelek in Olam Haba. Another important point that emerges from the Rambam's position is what is the role of Gehenim. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Ches Halacha Aleph, page 24. Hatova tzvuna letzadikim, as we saw, is olam haba. What then is the ultimate punishment? V'chol mi she'eno zolcha l'chayim elu, hu hames she'eno chay liolam. Ela nichras berisho ve'avad kebehema. V'zehu kari saksuva b'torah. If the ultimate reward is eternality of the soul, then the ultimate punishment is death of the soul. And thus, the kares haksuva b'torah is that when somebody dies, their soul ceases to exist. Shenamar, hi kares hanefesh ahi. This is the drash in Sanhedrin. Mepi ashmu alamdu, hi kares ba'olam hazeh, hi kares le'olam haba. Tikares li'olam haba means he doesn't exist eternally. Kolomar, she'osa nefesh shepirsha min haguf ba'olam hazeh, ena zoch l'chem haba, elagam min ha'olam haba nichrases. He dies like an animal, his physical body dies, and his soul ceases to exist. That's the ultimate punishment. Much worse than Gehenim is that a person's soul ceases to exist when their physical body dies as well. There were many, again, detractors of the Rambam, including during the lifetime of the Rambam and shortly thereafter, who read this passage and said, you see from here that the Rambam denies Gehenim. He denies any sort of afterlife punishment. Because after all, what is the punishment that he talks about? The punishment that he discusses is simply the death of the soul. And in a certain sense, that might make sense based on the Rambam's general position. What need is there for the soul to suffer? And indeed, in Mishnah Torah, he does not mention Gehenim anywhere. In the old editions of the Mishnah Torah, he does, but those are likely errors, as the Frankel edition in Parakeh Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah point out. And thus, he doesn't mention Gehenim. And indeed, he also seems to have a position about kares over here, which is against Chazal, because he says, what is kares? Kares is simply death of the soul. Now, the truth of the matter is that the Rambam in Perusha Mishnayos clearly adopts another position of kares as well. In the 10th and 11th chapter of Perusha Mishnayos, he writes that kares is lefisha mechuy of kares nishar ha'onesh alav achar hamafes, that kares is onesh la'achar misa, meaning to say whether or not you call it Gehenim, and the Rambam in Perusha Mishnayos does indeed call it Gehenim, or talk about Gehenim, there is such a thing as punishment after death. In other words, it's absolutely clear that the Rambam does not reject after-death punishment. And again, he refers to Gehenim explicitly in the Perusha Mishnayos. And lest you say, well, perhaps that was his position in Perusha Mishnayos, but in Mishneh Torah Yud Chozer Bo, but that's not true as well. There are many places where clearly in the Mishneh Torah he accepts the notion of after-death punishment. For example, in Gimel Hay of Tshuvos, Hilchos Tshuva, he writes, Habenonim im haya bichlal mechta avono shalahen shelo chai hiniach tfilin me'olam, donin oso kifi cheto v'yesh lo chelak li'olam haba. The Rambam here is talking about punishment after death. If there's a person who lived his whole life without wearing tefillin, he is punished according to his sins, but he has a chelak in olam haba. Now, if he says after death, you're punished according to your sins, and then you have a chelak in olam haba, clearly he accepts the notion that there's a possibility of punishment after death. So, to me, it's clear and unequivocal from many places to Rambam that he certainly did accept the notion of punishment after death. There's a fascinating letter of the Ramban where he defends the Rambam against his French critiques, those who claim that the Rambam rejects Gehenim. And the Ramban beautifully writes about the greatness of the Rambam. It's a very long letter written entirely in poetry. It's rhyming. Much of it is quoted in the footnote 23 and page 25. And it's really fascinating to read, for example, why he decided to write it in poetry. He points out, among other things, that the Rambam's position is taken entirely from the Sifra. ki shamanu shatem omrim ki hu. He brings many of the proofs that I brought just now are really taken straight from the Ramban. Ki hu ke kofir medina shal gehenem mipnei shamar nekama she'en lamala mimena hi sheti kares hanefesh v'tovad. No, that's not true. Continuing on page 26, he proves from many places that the Rambam indeed accepts the notion of Gehenim and the like. The Ramban does note that the Rambam nowhere mentions the 12-month limit for Gehenim and suggests perhaps the Rambam didn't take those passages literally. And then he makes a very important point, which is that even though the Rambam here does make some mistakes, especially with respect to afterlife punishment, Das Harav Zal, Ubevadai Demasnisen de Edios Havyati Yufta, Mikomakom, Hamifarish Kane, Im MS Vim Sheker Lo Kafar Virabosenu Zal Velo Fakar. Aval Bein Tov Lara Kefida Ato Bikar. Ozen v'chiker. So, very important point. Just because he made a mistake, he's not a kofer. Much like we saw earlier. And therefore, don't get so upset at the Rambam. The Rambam was a great person, great thinker, great communal leader. And even if he makes mistakes, those don't take away from that. And then he talks about why he thinks the Rambam doesn't talk so much about Gehenim. All right, I guess we have to stop here. I know there are a lot of questions. Just one second. Please come up and ask your questions. As I mentioned last time, the Bechina Be'ez Hashem will be January 6th. Many people I know... 6th, right? I know many people won't be able to make it. We'll have one or two makeup dates afterwards, maybe before. So if you have problems making it, it's no problem. In terms of Chazara, I'll give you review sheets also. We'll have a Chazara shir. If we have time, we'll do it the last class, and if not, we'll do it sometime during the week, and we'll put it online for those who can't make it. No, we have, according to my schedule, we have two more classes, right, the 23rd and the 30th of December, and then the Bechina on the 6th. Have a wonderful Shabbos. I'm sorry? I don't know. I'll try to find out. Look on it, whatever it says on a REITs calendar.
Did you just say about the Rambam?